18 in life, you got it. 18 in life, you know. Your crime is time and it's
life to go.
Yeah, man. Welcome to episode 18. We're legal. Follow our OnlyFans. I'm
Hell
Joey.
Yeah. I'm Jay. I'm going down to the corner store to buy a lottery ticket and a pack of cigarettes.
That leads to my question, Jay. Did you do anything of import when you turned 18?
I did buy a lottery ticket. I did not buy any tobacco products.
Okay. Okay.
I'm pretty sure I voted too.
Ooh, that's pretty big. What year did you turn?
Don't make me do math, bro. Oh, let's see. 2004.
Okay.
Is that true? Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay. Go. Okay. I turned 18 after whatever the local elections were, so
'03.
I had to hold off to participate.
Sure.
But I did volunteer in the 2002 elections in West Virginia, and someone accidentally locked the ballot box.
Was it
like
you?
Halfway through the day? No. Just like one of the poll workers was tooling around, and womp.
Whoopsies.
I had to get the official down there to unlock it. Luckily, nobody was voting.
Luckily for our nation, no one was voting. Yeah.
It's just the local stuff. Who cares about that?
Yep.
Just the stuff that affects you daily.
It won't affect you on a regular basis.
My best friend from high school, his birthday is 5 days after mine. So we really lived it up, man. Like everything a teenage degenerate dreams of. In order, we went to the porn store, found out that wasn't our scene. He bought
real quick.
Yeah.
Found out real soon.
I'll tell you what, man. What really kind of annoys, we're like, oh, we're 18, we can go to the spank shop. We walk in there, a dude from high school who we know is like 16 or 17 got in with a fake ID.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, man, this kind of takes the luster off even more. But then he bought clove cigarettes. I don't know why clove cigarettes. And then I bought lottery tickets, and then we went to the casino.
Oh, hell yeah.
It was definitely dirtbag day for the two of us.
Have you ever won, like... Are you a lottery ticket player? I mean, have you ever won more than a couple bucks on a lottery ticket?
I won like $50. I guess it was $50, one of the bigger $10 scratch offs.
Oh, hell yeah. I won $100 on a $5 one time.
Oh, that's a great investment.
I told my buddy I'd give him 10%, and it pissed me off because I won $100, so I had to give him $10. I was driving, and he was in the back seat. I said, if you scratch this off and we win, I'll give you 10% of whatever it is. And I won $100.
We're talking real money at that level.
I know. I was in high school, too, so I was like, shit, I could have used that.
I've won like a few $100 here and there on slot machines, but I've never like had the guts to go like real big on bets, but maybe one day. All right, so related to turning 18, what's the theme today?
I'm still thinking about Skid Row, brother. Let's see.
I was listening to that today, and McNeil was like, is this one of the albums you all have to listen to? I was like, nah, man.
Nah, just some Skid Row. Listening to Skid Row for fun. They played in Manhattan, Kansas a couple years ago. Like, ooh. I think it was maybe just, I don't know if it was just Sebastian Bach and a couple dudes, or if it was, I don't know who it was.
Did you go?
He's Skid Row, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Without the Bach, there's no Skid Row. Yeah.
Or somebody else, like a week apart. Who is the group that did Because I Got a High?
Oh, that was, what's that?
Afro Man?
Yeah.
Yes. So a week apart in this shitty little bar on the, it just was like a crummy bar in Manhattan, Kansas. A week apart, they had Skid Row and Afro Man.
Jesus.
Went to neither.
I would love to see the crowd that pulled.
All right. So this week, the theme is a little different. Not really that different, just something I pulled out of my butt. But we're going to be talking about transportation, traveling, getting around.
Bro trip, we are all over the map this week. It's going to be fun. All right, what's kicking us off?
We're going to go with an album called Street Songs. So streets, you know, driving around on those. The fifth album by Rick James. It was released in April 1981 on Gordy Records. Are you familiar with the Super Freak?
Rick James? And when you think of Rick James, this is the album.
Yeah, the lead song off of this, Give It To Me, Baby.
Mm-hmm.
Was
Give It To Me, Baby.
Yes, 5 weeks at the top spot.
Wow.
And then Super Freak, obviously, is a big hit. So
yeah.
Let's dive on in here. Side A, the first song actually is Give It To Me, Baby. What'd you think? That was a banger.
I think it's a great way to start the album. Just a real iconic track. Like, you've got that funk and soul that's kind of weaning off the disco era. And the album's self-produced, which is pretty great. It sounds amazing.
It does. And I was ready for some funky stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I maybe wasn't ready for some really cool horns and strings, and it had them. Give me that stuff, that funk, that sweet, that funky stuff. Say what? Like, hell yeah, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of guitars, like, it's...
Yeah, his delivery is cool, and there was some cool guitar on this. And I talk about that in this next song, actually, Ghetto Life.
The first thing I have is just a really impeccable, seamless transition.
Yeah, interesting lyrical content. I mean, he's talking about life growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one of the lines that really caught me was, one thing about the ghetto, you don't have to hurry. It'll be there tomorrow. So, brother, don't you worry. Like, it's kind of some hopelessness feeling there. Like, it's going to be there. You're going to have to live through it. So,
one thing about this, well, there are two things related to your point. This track really shows how social and conscious Rick James was. Because, I mean, you know, like you said, like, people think Super Freak. It's like, nah, I mean, we're going to get to some more of this, but the track also shows how strong his voice is and his range.
Yes, it is. And I was impressed.
Yeah.
And to go back to the point that you made on the first song, I mean, this is funk, but there's some fuzzy guitars. There's some cool hand claps. You got some horns. The guitar is slick on that one. And there was a little sax solo in there too that was really good. Great. First two songs coming out hot. Let's see. Track three, Make Love to Me. That one had some sexy saxophone played on that one.
You on the bottom, me on top, rolling around to a saxophone sound. Like,
yeah. That was probably the most getting busy song I've ever heard. Like, he's not hiding anything lyrically and musically. It's just like, let's get it on.
It's a play-by-play.
Oh, for sure. I think it'd be really funny to be on like a movie soundtrack where two really nerdy characters are getting it on. That'd be pretty funny. But yeah, that one was the real deal. He wasn't holding anything back.
Like, there's no other time period where that song would have worked other than, like, 1980, 1981.
Track four, Mr. Policeman, another one that is very, very, has a lot to say. Totally different, though. Totally different musically than the other ones on the album so far.
First off, it's way, way, way too relevant 40 years later.
Yeah, no shit. It's a shame. It's a disgrace. Why every time you show your face, somebody dies, man.
Yes.
Somebody dies, man.
Yeah. The music, it's kind of plucky.
It's got like a reggae kind of bass line. Yeah.
Yeah, the lyrics are so important. His voice is just so powerful and passionate. And I kind of can't believe this song hasn't found a new life. Maybe people just don't know about it, but it's unbelievably potent.
The message really hits. And it's sad that, you know, this stuff isn't new. I guess thank God for cell phone cameras, because it's been going on a long time. People have been telling us that it's been going on a long time, and finally we're getting it on video so people can see, hey, look, there are certain things people are facing in certain places that we all need to be aware of. So that rolls into side B here, and the title track on side, or not title track, the lead off track on side B is MC Hammer's what was his song called that he ripped the bass line off of this? It's Super Freak, but MC Hammer ripped off the bass line. Can't touch this. Can't touch this. But this is Super Freak, and it's a funky MF-er.
What can you say? I mean, it's Super Freak. If you don't know, get your head out of your ass. Come on.
You know, and the funny part about it was, though, so this is the fifth song on this album up to this point. And it's the one that actually felt like the most like a novelty kind of song. Like it, I mean, the rest of it was really, I don't know. Side A was cool, really powerful, really cool. And then Super Freak leads off and it's just kind of like, hey, he's singing about this freaky gal. I don't think he really liked it. If I remember when I was reading about it, I don't think it was his favorite of the albums on here or the songs on here.
I could see that. I mean, it feels squeezed in.
I did like the part where at the on the outro he goes blow daddy and then somebody just rips up a saxophone solo. I was like, that's awesome. What a way to lead into a saxophone solo. Blow daddy and then boom, he hits it with the sax. Track 7 is Call Me Up. Very, very funky song. Really cool horns. It was a great song, but I didn't really have a whole lot to say about it. I liked it a lot, but I didn't really, nothing really stood out necessarily.
Yeah, it's a floor burner, but I'm with you.
And then finishing off with Below the Funk, Past the J. That one had some steam on it, some cool horns, and talking about smoking doobies.
Yeah, it's frantic, man. It keeps you moving hard. It's one of those, like you were saying earlier about Make Love to Me. I mean, this is another one of those where what you see is what you get. You know, pass me the joint.
Give me one more hit. I ain't finished with it. I got some more to say.
You know exactly, like, no metaphors here.
But still good. I thought it was a good one to go out on.
So, sure, oh, yeah, I'm with you.
And that's it. 8 songs. Not a whole lot on there, but
yeah,
I really,
sure.
really liked it. It's a cool album cover. It's got Rick James standing on a street corner under a lamppost with a couple ladies of the night walking by, and he's got a sick-ass Rickenbacker bass. It is the coolest-looking bass, and he's looking very fly. He's got leather pants on, thigh-high red leather boots, and a leather jacket. Looking real cool.
That album cover is such a power move. I mean,
the love it.
Yeah.
And then the back is him getting, him and the two ladies of the night getting frisked by a cop.
Oh.
Like the cop's got him up against like a railing and he's patting him down.
Oh, wow. Okay. I haven't seen the back of that. That's, wow. That takes on a whole new meaning.
Yeah. But I love his Rick bass. It's such a cool bass. White Rickenbacker. Anyway, that's Rick James. You got any final thoughts on Rick?
No, I mean, like you said, it's short, but maybe that's why it's so great. Like it just kind
of is great.
Yeah, it gets to the point and doesn't have too much filler.
$9.99, and I'm pretty sure, speaking of porno shops, I bought this one in the record store that is part of that porno shop in Kansas City.
It's honestly, if you're gonna buy, if a record is going to exist in a porno shop, it's gonna be Rick James.
That's one of them. Yeah, I'm fairly certain that's where I got it. All right, keeping the transportation theme going here, the second album we're going to talk about is an album called Midnight Highway. It's by a band called Accept. I don't know what the hell this album is. It's a compilation album. I'm 90% sure. It came out in 1983. That's literally all I can find on it. And I gave it a B+ effort, I promise. I tried to find where the hell this thing came from, what it is. But
dude, yeah, it doesn't exist on streaming. Nobody, even some random YouTuber will upload stuff like this. Didn't exist there. It's not listed in their discography.
It's a ghost.
I have no idea what this is or how it came to be, because it's not like a greatest hits either, because usually that's pushed a little bit and that's listed.
Yeah, and it had a lot of songs from one of their albums off of Breaker.
Mm-hmm.
And Breaker was their third album, so it had some off of that. It had some off of the album that came before that, so it might have come, I think it, well, let's see, 83, when did Breaker come out?
81.
So there you go. So I don't know if it was maybe something they put out in between when they actually released albums to boost things or something. I don't know. But yeah. I promise I gave it a pretty solid B+ effort to find answers on this, and I couldn't. So let's jump into Accept here.
It's like whatever the vinyl version of a mixtape is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very strange. At the bottom, it just on the bag, it says album compiled by Dave Hall. So he was just old Dave was just hanging out like, this one sounds good. Let's put this one on here. So
where are you at, Dave Hall? What are you doing?
I don't know. Well, they're a German band, so maybe this was a special thing where they just wanted to grow a name in the U.S. So we're going to put out.
Yeah, that's true. That's good. Yeah. So, you know, that's a good point, because their biggest single that is probably their most famous came out after this. So that could be it.
Is that Balls to the Walls?
Yeah.
Yes. Balls to the Wall, man.
Yeah, the one that if you wanted to find it on LimeWire, you just put not AC/DC, Balls to the Wall, because nobody knew.
Udo Dirkschneider is the lead vocalist. So let's jump into Accept here. Track one, Breaker. Had you heard Breaker? Actually, let's talk about this. Have you heard any Accept songs outside of Balls to the Walls?
I had heard Midnight Highway and Burning.
For some reason, I think I've heard Breaker before. This is the first track. Okay. And I don't think I've heard either of the two you mentioned before this. Okay. So, interesting, we both got kind of a smattering of Accept in our history. So anyway, Breaker, great guitars to kick it off. The bass and the drums were really slaying it. It's kind of a thundering bass riff, really fast. I like that one a lot. Weird lyrics. I think maybe the fact that they're German speaking by nature. Like one of the lyrics was icicle brains, bicycle chains. I don't know what that means
So I have that lyric down. Like, it's totally absurd, but I'm here for it. Because, like, icicle brains, maybe that's a German thing for stupid people. Mm-hmm. Bicycle chains? I'm assuming they meant, like, motorcycle chains. Or, like, I don't know, man. Because bicycle chains are not intimidating at all. But this...
I guess. I mean, it would hurt to get whipped by one, I suppose. Yeah. But I was in on this song. This one was obviously... I felt like influenced by some of the heavy metal, like the new wave of British heavy metal, like we talked about a couple weeks ago. Yeah. I think it was very obviously influenced by that. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And because of that, I liked it a lot.
And I think throughout this whole album, you see a lot of influence.
Oh, for sure. Next song too, as well.
Do you have much on Helldriver? Because there's one thing that really stood out to me.
I don't know. We'll see. I thought it sounded a lot like a Motorhead song, We Are the Road Crew, The Road Crew. Like the riff was almost exactly the same.
So I didn't make that connection with the chorus. To me, it sounded like Hot Patootie from the Rocky Horror Musical. But yeah, that's what I mean about, like, you hear these influences like Motorhead and New Wave British Heavy, like more Judas Priest. You hear AC/DC. Yeah.
Hell Driver, come stay to me. Oh, wait. Come to me, stay with me, come home with me. Like, I don't know what that means, but that's...
Yeah, I don't want a hell driver coming home with me.
Or staying with me, yeah.
Yeah.
But let's see, track three, Lady Lou.
Very theatrical.
I don't know. So I'm obviously viewing this through my own lens, or I guess in this instance, hearing it with my own ears. So I'm biased by, you know, what I like and things that I've heard before, but... It's kind of reminded me of a Rush track, and to a lesser extent, Kiss, maybe. Sure. Like the bass playing, which I thought was interesting because all three songs so far, I could point to different things that they kind of reminded me of, but they're all kind of their own thing. They all rock pretty hard. I didn't have much else on Lady Lou, but it did kind of remind me of maybe some Rush or maybe a lesser extent Kiss kind of stuff.
Sure, yeah.
Side A started real strong and then kind of fizzled. Breaker and Helldriver, I really liked.
Yeah, those are great.
Let's see. I'm sorry, there's one more on Side A. Son of a Bitch. So, let me tell you this. So, Son of a Bitch is supposed to be profanity-laced and anti-record company. What I think is funny is I think this album has the edited version. So instead of son of a bitch, he says born to be whipped.
Oh, man.
Yes. And there aren't any of the other kind of swear words on this. So I think I have the edited version of son of a bitch. The funny thing about it is on the back of the album, when it's got the track list, it's listed as son of a bitch. But I don't think he actually says the word son of a bitch at any point.
Oh, man. I want to hear that because... Yeah, there's a lot of profanity in it. Yeah, the chorus is just something else. Like, son of a bitch, kiss my ass, son of a bitch, you asshole, son of a bitch. Like, it reminds me of Wesley Willis, if you know who he is.
I don't, actually.
So he was a guy who was on Alternative Tentacles, and he had a disability, but he had songs like I Whoop Batman's Ass. And Rock and Roll McDonald's and stuff like that. And it was, this one, I don't know what they were going for, but they were making a point.
I thought it rocked pretty hard. I mean, we could talk about it musically because I didn't get the same lyrics that you did. So pretty hard rocking song. I intended to listen to the profanity laced version, but I didn't get to it, and I apologize.
So not only do you have this random album that we have no idea, you also have the clean version. Maybe it's like some like weird radio promo. Maybe they sent it to radio stations.
Could be, could be. I do know I paid $1 for it. I don't know where it came from, but it's got a sticker on it that says $1. So
okay,
it's a mystery album. I've got a few of those. Jumping into side B here, I'm a Rebel. Another one that reminded me of a different band. I'm curious if maybe you picked it up or thought the same, but I said that one kind of felt like a Sweet track a little bit.
Yeah, especially with that kind of sing-along power chord, power anthem chorus.
Yeah.
I kind of love the song. It's great to cheer and sing along to. But yeah, I put it's glam meets new wave of British heavy metal.
Yeah, I'm glad you thought that because I thought it could go two ways. Because in my head, I was like, all right, this sounds a little bit like it's got a Sweet vibe to it. Yeah. It's kind of a just a normal rock and roll song. It also had some AC/DC mixed in. I was like, okay, which side of that is Joey going to pick up on more? Because I know if it was, if you were like, oh, this sounds a lot like AC/DC, you'd be like, yeah, this isn't so great.
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of a dumb rocker, which is what AC/DC is, but it was a good song. I like that one.
Well, it's funny you say that because this was written by AC/DC.
No shit. I didn't even look that up.
So apparently they recorded it but never released it.
Interesting.
I have no idea how Accept got a hold of it. But yeah, I thought maybe it was some kind of glam band from the UK or Europe that I had never heard of. Yeah, it turns out.
Track 10, The King. That one was totally different and I really enjoyed it. I don't know. Did you like that one at all?
I wasn't expecting a power ballad to slide in.
Acoustic guitar making an appearance. It's a little slower, kind of epic. It's a song about the leader of a small gang of criminals who gets kind of caught and bad things happen to him.
Yeah, fallen power, man.
Down, down, down. Oh, a king has lost his crown. Caught and sentenced, he was guilty. Down, down, down. Oh, a king lost his crown. It's too late to hide. Late for to hide. There you go. You're caught, you son of a bitch. And then the final one on there, Burning. Another fake live. I thought it was live for a second, but it's fake live. I don't know. Not a bad song. It's a little bit of a ripper, but it didn't really grab me.
Yeah, and it's weird how they even made it sound kind of messy.
I didn't like the fake live.
Yeah.
Because of that.
Yeah.
And that's it for this album that may or may not be, God knows what it is, honestly, but wasn't bad. Strong start, kind of fizzled at the end of the A side. B side had a couple good tracks. Not bad.
Yeah. Some high highs and not so high highs.
Yeah. The third one we're going to talk about today is Jackson Browne's fifth album, Running on Empty. It was released December 6, 1977 on Asylum Records. Joe, you know anything about this?
A little bit. I'm kind of cynical when it comes to Jackson Browne. I lump him in with like the Eagles and like that Laurel Canyon pop country troubadour sound of the 70s.
I can see that.
Yeah, I'll have to talk through this one.
I will say that I really love this album. One thing I find really cool about it, though, is it's an album that features songs about life on the road, out there touring, doing your thing. But the thing I thought is really, really cool about it is the entire album was recorded on tour. So either live on stage in locations associated with touring, so like backstage or whatever, in hotel rooms. And there's even one track on here that was recorded on a tour bus driving down the highway. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I was going to say, I do think it's a really unique concept for recording that at times it made for an uneven sound, but at the same time, that worked really well for what he was going for.
I like that era and I like that sound. You know, like you said, the Laurel Canyon, like I'm a big Warren Zevon fan and I like Jackson Browne and I like, you know, that kind of stuff. The first track on side A is one people are probably going to know, Running on Empty.
Yeah.
That one was recorded live on stage in Meriwether Post Pavilion in Columbia, Maryland. I love that song.
Yeah, and as far as live recordings go, I mean, this sounded great. Really clear, sharp guitars, the piano.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's very well produced.
I love his piano playing and his voice together, and this song definitely has it. I don't know. I relate to this album a lot because I used to have a job where I was on the road a lot for work, driving all around the country. And obviously, I wasn't on the road for, you know, playing shows, but some of the feeling is the same. You know, when you're out on the road for days at a time, it's kind of exciting, but it's also kind of lonely and exhausting. And this whole album really kind of captures that feel to me. So maybe that's one reason I'm drawn to it. You know, I mean, lyrics like looking out at the road rushing under my wheels. Like, okay, yeah, I get that. I've been there.
Yeah, and like life just kind of starts to blend together.
Yeah, exactly.
And every new stop is the same stop.
Yes, yes, yeah. Exactly. So that brings us into track two, which kind of actually has that lyrics that describe that exact thing. So that's The Road, recorded in room 301 at the Cross Keys Inn in Columbia, Maryland. So, oh, and then that's for the first 3 minutes. And then the second half of it was recorded live, which I think is really interesting. So they spliced together a recording that they made in a hotel room with one that was recorded on stage.
Yeah, I thought that was such a unique artistic choice. It's a little clunky, but then it's like, well, it's road recorded. Like, what can you expect? But right. It's kind of haunting and affecting. And then, yeah, there's that splice that changes the atmosphere.
I don't know. I didn't have a ton to say on that one, but I thought it was really cool that they were spliced together too. And it's pretty seamless, the splice. As soon as the live version comes in, there's a lot more instruments involved because they're not in a hotel room. So you can have more stuff going on. But
yeah,
I don't know. I thought it was cool. Track three, Rosie, that was recorded backstage at the Saratoga Performing Arts Center in, quote, the big rehearsal room. So interesting. Just before a show, they were like, all right, let's slam this one out.
I know we got stuff going on, guys, but we really got to take care of this.
We got to put this one out, yeah. I love that song. Again, I've said this already, but I love listening to him play the piano and sing.
Mm-hmm.
The harmonies in the chorus are cool. Really kind of a sparse song, but it's really pretty. Just a bunch of dudes hanging out backstage making some magic. Jumping into side B, Shaky Town.
Mm-hmm.
Another one recorded in room 124 at the Holiday Inn in Edwardsville, Illinois. It's a trucking song. He's got some trucker lingo in there. That's a Big Ten 4 from your back door. Just put your hammer down. This young man feels these 18 wheels. Keep turning around. Take me to Shaky Town. So I guess they're just cruising down the road in an 18 wheeler.
I get like a less guttural Warren Zevon vibe from this. Mm. It's like Warren Zevon hard on country. I don't think this is his song. I'm pretty sure this is a cover, but it's just weird hearing him talk about 18-wheelers. It's like, I know who you are, guy. I can never see you in an 18-wheeler, but I still think he did a good job on it, even if it's hard to make that connection.
Yeah. I mean, it was actually a song written by a guy named Danny Korchmar.
Okay.
Who worked with a lot of those singer-songwriters from that era.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm with you. Speaking of Warren Zevon, actually, the next song was very Warren Zevon to me. Love Needs a Heart. It's got the same sort of piano and vocal stylings as Warren Zevon, definitely swimming in the same ocean. I didn't have a ton to say about it, but I thought it was a pretty good tune, and probably because I'm a big Warren Zevon fan, so I'm drawn to that kind of stuff.
I think you've nailed everything that I was going to say, but Valerie Carter with her backing vocals sounds amazing.
And that's another one that was a live tune.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Man, that sounded really good.
Yeah. Yep. Universal Amphitheater, Universal City, California. That's where that one was recorded.
Okay.
The next one, the coolest story on here, I think. Not my favorite song, but a cool story. So this one's Nothing But Time. It was recorded on a bus somewhere in New Jersey, driving down 295 from Portland, Maine. So they're on a bus recording this son of a bitch, going to their next gig. And the lyrics actually reference that, which I thought was very, very cool. I don't know. I love the song knowing that information. As a song altogether, it was just kind of blah. But knowing the fact that they are recording it on a bus, you can actually hear the bus's engine like downshifting at times.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I thought it was cool.
Yeah, it's fascinating that it was actually on the bus, because if you didn't know that, you would just think that, like so many other of these fake live or kind of like sound effect tracks, mm-hmm. that they just plugged it in there, but it adds authenticity.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. Just the fact that it was on a bus, and they're actually singing about the exact trip that they're on. So I'm wondering when they wrote those lyrics, because it's, I mean, they talk about coming down 295 out of Portland, Maine, and that's what they were doing. So I don't know. They couldn't have made it up on the spot, but I kind of feel like maybe they did some of it.
Wouldn't be surprised.
In the notes, it says that the drummer plays a snare, a hi-hat, and a cardboard box with a foot pedal. So they maybe set up a cardboard box with the bass foot pedal in front of it to whack it. I think that's funny.
That's pretty awesome.
And then the last two on here, probably songs. I don't know. If you don't know Jackson Browne, these two maybe are ones you're going to know. We've got The Loadout, which it was recorded live at the Meriwether Post Pavilion in Columbia, Maryland. I've always loved that one. It's a tribute to roadies and fans, which I think is cool.
I like the line about Richard Pryor on the video.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very stream of consciousness. It's like, oh, we're doing this and this, and we have Richard Pryor on the video. And I'm like, this is so bizarre, but at the same time, it's life on the road. And
it is life, like, on the road. That's kind of what I was getting at. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, he goes through all the different genres of music they're listening to, and as he goes through them, the band shifts into that style, which I thought was kind of cool. You know, we've got disco on the radio. They play a disco kind of vibe, and I don't know. I think it was really cool, you know.
Yeah.
Lyrically, I like that one, you know. But when the last guitar has been packed away, you know that I'll still want to play. So just make sure you got it all set to go before you come for my piano. So he's just like, you know, thank you for busting your ass, roadies, but don't pack up the piano until the last minute. And then the other lyric I always like in this song is the one where they don't really know where they're going. You know, he's talking about a show in Chicago or Detroit. I don't really know. We do so many shows in a row. It kind of all these towns all look the same.
Yeah.
Which I can totally relate to that, having been, you know, on the road quite a bit for work. I don't know. I love that song. Always have. Let's see. And then that rolls directly into Stay, which is a cover of a doo-wop song by a band called The Zodiacs, which, cool fucking name for a band. I would love to be in a band called The Zodiac. Just kind of asking the crowd to stick around. Kind of feels like a gimmick a little bit, but I think it's probably heartfelt. I mean, I think they really are saying, hey, we're glad you're here. You know, hang out. We're going to play another song or two.
Hey, stick around and hang out with us. It's, you know, the love of the music.
Yeah, I think it's cool too, because, you know, the song before kind of feels like it's talking about life on the road. Maybe not so glamorous, maybe not the most fun all the time. But then they go into this and they're like, hey, the one part of touring that we do enjoy is getting to play for you fans. So, you know, kind of stick around. We're going to play a couple more tunes, that sort of thing. So, I don't know. I always like that whole message. Anytime an artist is like, you know, we do appreciate, you know, people coming out and stuff. So I think that's cool. So this is the first time I ever actually sat down and researched it and actually learned that it was recorded in a whole bunch of different spots on the road, which knowing that and then listening to it, I think it made me appreciate it more than maybe I did before. Hey everyone, Jay here.
And Joey.
We're having a lot of fun doing this, and we're grateful to everyone who's tuned in so far. As the podcast grows, we hope to keep everything as independent as possible.
Which is why we've created a Buy Me a Coffee campaign.
Buy Me a Coffee is a great way to support us for as little as $1 or $4 per month, or $40 per year. We're still coming up with bonuses and perks, but we hope you'll consider supporting us while we iron out those things.
Interested in being the oil to this machine? You can find us at buymeacoffee.com/Jay and Joey, or find the link in the show notes.
Thanks everyone, and enjoy the show.
Thank you all.
So far we've got street songs. We've got Midnight Highway for our transportation. That one's running on empty. So let's roll into another automobile themed album. We're going to talk about The Cars' fourth studio album, Shake It Up. was released in 1981 on Elektra Records, November 6, 1981, to be specific. Fourth album, we already listened to their debut earlier on. So what do you think about this one down the line?
I mean, honestly, I really liked it, close to loved it. I'm so glad this has gotten me back into the Cars. Just this album really leans into a more new wave sound, which, you know, I mm-hmm. like. But how do you feel about it?
The same. Well, actually, maybe not the same. I agree that it does sound a lot more new wave. I think it's a much more pop-oriented album than their mm-hmm. predecessor. I liked the debut more simply because yeah. There's more guitar involved. There's less guitar involved in this one. It's more synth, which mm-hmm. is fine. I mean, it's good synth, especially the first song, Since You're Gone. Great mm-hmm. little hand claps to kick that one off. Yeah. And then it's got the new wave, you know, power ballad, cool synth, really solid opener. But it's definitely a much more synth-oriented album than the first,
yeah.
than their debut.
I think it's a nice change of pace. They kind of allowed them to reinvent and challenge themselves. To me, it sounded a little mature.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, track two, Shake It Up, just a fun little dance pop tune.
Yeah.
Fun guitar solos on that one.
Haters gonna hate. No, that's Shake It Off. Yeah, it's fun and it's dancey, man. Like, that's the exact way of describing it.
I like when they bring in a little bit of backup vocals on that one.
Yeah, yeah.
But definitely like a dancey pop tune. Anything else on Shake It Up before we jump into track three, I'm Not the One?
With I'm Not the One, if I had never heard the Cars before, I would have guessed this was an indie Dreamwave track from like 2015 because it just sounds so modern.
It does. It's kind of sparse in the intro yeah. with just like the synth and the drums and then cool harmonies, really slick synth playing, some cool guitars. It's still got the hand claps. At one point, they got the synth sounding kind of like a horn, which is always kind of interesting. But yeah, I agree. It could fit into any era in between like then and now. You could really stick
sure,
it in
there. Yeah.
Track five, Cruiser. That one I liked. That was cool.
Yeah, kind of snarling, a little darker again.
Yeah. And interesting. I like the, so they had to, and a lot of these songs, I think, have a drum machine playing. This one had a drum machine just playing a, you know, a repetitive rhythm, but then you've got the actual drummer playing along with it, which is kind of funny. Definitely more of a rocker. This is the first song with Benjamin Orr on lead vocals, which is funny because I can't tell them apart at all. Benjamin Orr versus Rick Ocasek. I mean, they sound basically the same to me.
Yeah, I wonder how much tension there was and if anybody ever just spoke up and was like, guys, you pretty much sound the exact same. Like, let's just
pick one.
Yeah.
I mean, they both sound good. Don't get me wrong, but they both sure, kind of yeah. sound the same. There's almost like they're kind of Bob Dylan vocal stylings adjacent. Like, Since You're Gone. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah. I never thought about that. Now I want a Bob Dylan New Wave album.
But you know, you can kind of picture it though.
Totally.
Since yeah. You're Gone.
Yeah.
That jumps into side B, A Dream Away. I was really digging the synth riff on that one.
Especially with the vocal effects, and it just kind of like stretches but and takes a while to find its footing, but in a good way.
Yeah, you got the same kind of repetitive riff going on in the background and then just kind of floating along like in a dream. It was a cool song. This could be love, which on the title I was like, okay, this is gonna be a love song, but it actually feels kind of ominous almost.
Yeah, it's gothic.
It's the least poppy song on there so far.
Yeah.
But a lot more electronic and dark.
Yeah, yeah. It's got this like Devo-esque like math rock sound to it.
Yeah, it was kind of weird, but I really, really liked that one for whatever reason. It was a cool song. And then the final track on here, Maybe Baby. I think that was a good one to end on.
Dude, yeah, the intro was so badass. It's got that aggressive percussion.
Yeah, the drums are pounding a lot more on that one.
Yeah, it's like these big moments of neon that are just like bursting through the darkness. I thought it was a great closer.
Yeah, a little bit more guitar on that one too, which, as I said before, the reason I like their debut so much is there is a little bit more guitar on it. But, you know, pretty good one to end on. Be my maybe baby. So let's see here. Final thoughts on it?
I thought it was another great outing by the Cars for sure.
Yeah, and I've already touched on my main points. I mean, a little more synth heavy. Still very, very solid. Nothing. There weren't any misses. There were a few standout tracks. Nothing that I, nothing on there. I was like, this sucks. It was all pretty solid.
Totally agree.
Transportation album number 5. We're talking Mass Transit, Chicago Transit Authority. This is the self-titled debut album by Chicago, then known as Chicago Transit Authority. Let's see. It was released. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say before a lawsuit made them.
Is that why? I didn't ever know why they changed their name.
Yeah, the Chicago Transit Authority sued them while they were on tour. So they had...
That sucks. That's a great name. I like really that name a lot.
Yeah, I guess Chicago was a lot more stuffy and conservative back then, but I mean, it's kind of great free publicity at the same time. There are definitely shittier bands to be associated with by far. Like, these dudes are great, and you want to see
them? Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, that sucks. Anyway, came out April 28, 1969 on Columbia. This bad boy was nominated. Actually, not the album, but the album itself resulted in Chicago being nominated for the Grammy for Best New Artist of the Year. And this album has gone double platinum, so it's a big boy.
Double platinum for the double album.
Yes, sir. 70 minutes about of Chicago, which I'm not complaining. It's pretty solid.
No, yeah.
Diving in, the introduction coming in hot. And I love that it is literally an introduction to what's going to happen. So this is what we do. Sit back and let us groove and let us work on you. We're going to hit you with some funk. Pretty solid.
First song, first album, and they're busting out this 6.5 minute nasty funk tune. Like, I can't imagine what people thought when they heard this song and this entire album.
I loved it. Sweet little horn solo. This whole album, anytime I listen to Chicago, it kind of makes me wish I'd never given up on playing the trumpet. So I played the trumpet for like, 8 years or something. Makes me wish I could still do it.
Oh, sure.
I probably could,
but
I would suck. Let's see. I don't know.
Yeah, brass is so cool, man. I feel like it's underrated.
It is, and they doesn't get the love so it deserves. Well.
Yeah.
They hit you with the tempo changes in this one. They get a little bit more rocking. The bass rips it up for a minute. The guitar solo comes in there. I just love that everyone gets their fair shake. They spread the love around. A lot of tempo changes. And then even more hysterically to me, they mention the fact that they had just hit you with the changes and then roll into, telling you, hey, we're here. Let's go.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%.
Track 2. Does anybody really know what time it is? Does anybody really care? It's my second question. What do you think? I'm very familiar with this, and I'm guessing you are too, right?
Sure, yeah. So, man, that piano at the beginning, dude.
You don't hear that. Yeah, that's only on the album version. They got a little freeform piano there.
I have a little tidbit about this song. When you're
okay, hit me with it.
This actually wasn't released as a single, and this is one of their more radio-friendly hits. This wasn't released as a single until after the singles on their second album.
Really?
This one, and I think Question 67 and 68 was released after like their third or fourth album. So these are singles that came, like found a second life like years later.
That is interesting. And it's a cool track. I mean, you said, I loved letting the horns shine through in the intro. How do you pronounce his name? Lee Luhang? Luhang on the trumpet throughout this whole thing. I mean, Peter Cetera's bass playing, his bass line is dancing all over the place on that one. Robert Lamb's voice is great. This one really made me remember, like I mentioned, probably the first time we listened to Chicago, how great the horns sound on my speakers. Like, it's, I don't know if my speakers are like,
imagine.
They're designed for horns, I feel like, because they just sound terrific. Speaking of great horn playing, Beginnings, more great horn playing. Another track I'm very familiar with, track 3 here, Beginnings.
It builds so nicely in the middle with that wonky-ass trumpet that really gets like this free-flow psych jazz thing launched off.
And they hit you with a really long drum, extended percussion time at one point. So, the Beginnings, this is like the 8-minute long album version. There's a shorter version that you maybe have heard on the radio, but the extended percussion time reminded me of this one instance in high school. I don't know why. My buddies and I were all in the band, and we had a substitute teacher one day, and we walked in first hour of the day, and we We all told the sub that we played percussion, even though we did not. We all played different instruments. So we spent the whole class period back there just dicking around with different percussion instruments, just like the little timpani, the little blocks, the little, like, I think maybe we hit him with that. What's that one that sounds kind of like a rattle? Like you hit it and it goes.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder. Pretty great. I wonder what the sub thought if they're just like, my God, they're so talentless and hopeless.
I can't imagine she didn't know that we actually didn't play the percussion and just let us do our, like, these fucking kids, I'm done with them for today. I'm not going to mess with them. But anyway, sorry. That's an extended weird little story. Then that brings us only three songs on side A. So that jumps into side B here. Questions 67 and 68. I really love the intro on that one.
Yeah.
Very Beatles vibe to the whole song, though, to me. But the way the trumpet and the piano kind of go together, very Beatles-y.
Dude, like the big horns and the shredding. I love this song.
Yeah, it rips pretty hard.
Man, I love it so much. And the movements throughout the song are just insane. The brass is unreal good.
The horns never take a break throughout the whole song. I mean, they're kicking ass the whole time. And you're right. I mean, it definitely rips a little more than some of the other ones. And Peter Cetera's voice, all of their voices. I like that they have a variety of different vocalists, and they're all great. Like, I enjoyed no matter who's singing. But you're right. Peter Cetera's voice is great on this one.
Yeah, this is absolutely my song of the week.
Speaking of good bass.
Oh, dude.
Track 5, Listen, the bass is real good on that
one. Oh, my God. It is so good.
Rock's a little harder, but it's damn funky. Horns are still great, obviously, but that one, the bass really stood out to me.
Man, I kept scrubbing back and listening to the early bass lines because chef's kiss.
Yeah, it was very, very good. And honestly, we're going to go into the third song on side B. There's only three songs on side B, but for me on this four side album, side B is the standout side. Poem 58. Track 6, hell yeah. Got some fuzzy guitars, got some really groovy bass line. The drums are pounding. That's a ripper with a cool little groove at it. And then Peter Cetera's bass. Holy shit.
Dude, yeah, everything about it's groovy, like you said. His bass is unbelievable. Terry Kath is just such shredding. A good guitarist.
Yes. Like, he's a virtuoso, dude. And as a band, they're so tight. I don't know. It's a cool ass song. And the vocals don't come in for a long time, but when they do finally come in, Robert Lamb's voice is great. It's good shit.
Yeah, I'm with you. I absolutely think that this side B is, I mean, my God, it's better than a lot of people's full albums.
And like you said, Terry Kath rips it up. He is just a monster on the guitar. I appreciate that. I mean, there's so many things going on with Chicago. To have everyone be freaking awesome is pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That brings up such a good point that everyone is so good at what they do that you have to constantly pushing yourself and upping your game.
Yeah, I'm with you totally. But let's jump into side C here. Track 7, Freeform Guitar.
Had you heard this before?
No, and I'm betting my wife thought that there was something wrong with my stereo because it's just so it's Terry Kath plugged in directly to the studio amplifier, just improvising wild shit, and it's Hendrixian. I mean, it's got to be the weirdest, wildest thing we've heard on any album up to this point, in my opinion. Fully experimental, just wild. I got it. And that's the thing. Yeah. I get what you're doing. Maybe I don't need 6 minutes and 47 seconds of it. Definitely interesting. 9 is a Spencer Davis Group cover of I'm a Man. Chicago's version fucking rips. Like, I love it. And again, Terry Kath, absolute virtuoso on the guitar. Peter Cetera slays the bass playing. Danny Serafines on the drums, solid. And then you got Lamb on the organ just roaring around back there. But
this is one, cool. It made me think of last week when we were talking about extended cuts of songs. And this is one that I'm okay with because it's got those, I think you called them the Waka Waka guitars one time.
Yes.
It does. It's got everything, man. It's got the Waka Waka guitars, the drum fills, hand percussion organs, like a little feedback.
And then I like that after that section, the extended kind of drum auxiliary percussion section, they come back in. They hit you with the organ and the guitar right after that. It rips. And I do like that each of Kath, Satara, and Lamb sing a verse on it, which is cool to me. I was, yeah, you know, trading off. But no, it's a ripper. I like that one a ton. Let's jump into the final side here. Track 10, Prologue, August 29, 1968. It was just recording of people chanting, "The whole world is watching," really, is all that was.
Yeah, and then it bleeds into the next track.
Yeah, track 11, Someday, which in parentheses, August 29, 1968. And then final track on this 76-minute long album is Liberation. I think it's interesting they decided to finish it off with a 14-minute, mostly instrumental track. This was written by the trombone player, Jimmy Pankow.
Oh, nice. Okay. Everybody's, it's ripping. Man.
Yeah, it rips on the way out. Really a complex tune.
5 days of recording, 5 days of overdubbing. That's it. Nice. 10 days to make this album. And it's incredible. Like,
it is. It kicks ass. I mean,
yeah.
Great debut. Great debut. It's kind of ballsy to have your debut be a 76-minute long double album. And I love it. Definitely has the goods. I think side four was a little weak, but it kicked ass for the most part.
Yeah.
Last one we're doing this week for Transportation. Definitely not a debut. This is going to be the Moody Blues 10th studio album, Long Distance Voyager. Came out in May of 1981 on the band's own Threshold record label. You know anything about the Moody Blues?
I only knew early Moody Blues, so stuff from the 60s. Dude, this shocked me.
Did you like it?
I think I was more borderline, but leaning towards like, but I was not expect. It took me a while to adjust.
Sure, totally. But I think it's funny though. At the same time, I'm with you too. Totally. You know, lead off track here, The Voice. It starts out kind of spacey, but that one of all the tracks on here does have more of the classic Moody Blues. Like as soon as it comes in, you're like, okay, this is the Moody Blues, but it's also pop new wave Moody Blues.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It took me pretty much most of the A side to just like readjust.
And I think the A side's really solid. We'll get into it. I don't really care too much for the B side, but the A side I thought was really solid here. So The Voice is a great tune. I think that one did get some radio airplay. I do remember listening to this. As soon as that one came on, I was like, oh, I have a kind of fuzzy memory of my dad playing this album when I was a little kid, which I think is always kind of cool. And let's see, track 3, Gemini Dream. This one, as soon as this one came in, I was like, oh, then the fuzzy memory of listening to this album with my dad when I was little got a little bit more clear because I very distinctly remember this song.
Yeah, this one I was definitely not familiar with. It was kind of Dire Straits-y at times.
Yeah, it's kind of a funky little thing, maybe even a little disco influence, maybe just a little bit.
For sure.
I enjoyed the kind of driving rhythms and the synth on that one. It was cool. Mm-hmm. Cool song. I think that one and The Voice got the most radio play off of this thing.
Okay.
In My World, kind of a slow jam.
Yeah, so this was kind of like the familiar Moody Blues meets the early 80s. I mean, I can't complain. It wasn't bad. It was a pretty good slow jam.
I couldn't pick out what it reminded me of. It reminded me of something, but I couldn't figure it out. Mm. But I also detected a little flute in there. So you're trying to throw a flute at me, baby. Take it. That brings us into side B. So one of my notes is nothing stands out to me. I don't hate it. And that might be my description of the whole album. Like, nothing really stood out too much to me, but I didn't hate it at any point. It was kind of just...
Yeah, for sure.
Especially side A. Really solid.
I think that's totally fair.
Let's see. Painted Smile. Kind of a carnival tune, maybe a little bit. Reminds me of maybe something the Beatles would do with Ringo. It's like a Ringo Beatles track to me.
I love that so much because I have all these descriptors, but like Ringo Beatles track is exactly what I was searching for.
Right? It's just a totally different vibe than the rest of the album. And it definitely just like Ringo Beatles track. It's like Yellow, you know, Octopus's Garden, Yellow Submarine kind of vibe to it. Yeah. Last one on here, Veteran Cosmic Rocker. Comes in hot. You can tell they're kind of planning on going out with a bang. And it's just a weird little tune.
Dude, what was going on with these last three songs? Like,
I don't know. That's what I mean. Like, side B, not real strong. Side A, I love. Side B, eh, it's okay. Very weird.
Yeah, this one has some Middle Eastern influence and, like, a harmonica breakdown. And I'm with you, man. Like, I just don't know. I thought side A was so good, and side B, it almost felt like they accidentally put the wrong side B on there.
Yeah.
Oh, shit, these aren't the two albums we were supposed to put together.
This isn't what we wanted. It was weird. Lots of variety. I got the same Middle Eastern influence. On the whole, let's see. One more thing. Let me tell you about this album cover real fast. So it's got what looks like old-timey folks standing in front of a dude, like a puppet show, maybe? Like a guy playing the drum or something. But then in the very, very top left, it says Long Distance Voyager, which is the name of the album. And under the word Voyager, there is a very, very light, I guess, image of the Voyager spacecraft that we launched in the, I don't know, what was it, 80s, 70s, whenever we launched that bad boy.
Wait, really?
Cool. Yeah. Up under the V and O in Voyager, there's a really faint image of the Voyager spacecraft.
Oh, okay. I see that now. Yeah, I thought it was just a tree branch. That is so, oh man.
I think it's cool. The juxtaposition of like the old timey people standing around watching that puppet show with the Voyager spacecraft up there. Kind of cool.
It's a little world within a world. Okay.
So that's it. Any final thoughts on that one?
I don't. Yeah. You got any final thoughts on this or this week? For this whole week, I loved how it was, I mean, just something different around each turn. I was thrilled.
Me too. It was a fun week to do, especially because the theme I just kind of grabbed out of the air. Okay. I've got six albums that I could kind of say are transportation, you know, related. And I think they were a good six. I enjoyed it. It's a good week.
Absolutely. Yeah. Inspired choice this week. So didn't see that coming. Question. If you could transform yourself into any type of vehicle, what would you choose and where would you go?
So I would probably go for like a deep sea submersible, like robot, like they have, like the unmanned ones that go really, really, really deep. That's what I would do, because I want to see what's down there.
Absolutely, man. It's so fascinating. Like, I love outer space, but at the same time, I'm like, what is down there?
It's kind of the same thing, almost. Like, I want to know what's down in the depths, and I think that'd be cool.
Somebody get on that. What are we doing? Science, come on.
Screw Mars. Elon Musk and his crew trying to go to Mars. Let's figure out what's at the bottom of the oceans first. My question for you. So I liked your word association question from the anniversaries so much last week. I'm going to hit you with something similar. So I'm going to name different various modes of transportation.
Okay.
And you are going to tell me the first band or song or album that comes to mind when I say the name of the mode of transportation. So whenever you're ready.
Okay.
Truck.
The first thing that comes to mind is Waxahachie St. Cloud, because the album cover is her sitting on a truck. It's one of my favorite albums of last year.
Okay. Airboat.
Gotta be Dirtbag Rock. Little Feet.
Roller Skates.
Ooh, Roller Skates. The Go-Go's.
Two more. Biplane.
Biplane. Ooh, that's... just because of how old they are, it makes me think of this song called Fine Romance. And if you hear the original version, it's like one of those very old-timey type tracks. And the lyrics are like something extent of, we should be a couple of hot tomatoes, but we're cold like yesterday's mashed potatoes, or something like that. So a fine romance. It's like a fine romance with no kisses. Yeah.
Last one here, Freight Train.
Arlo Guthrie's City of New Orleans.
Wonderful. I like your picks. I thought for Biplane you might go with Aces High, Iron Maiden.
Oh, that would have been a good one. I was also thinking Neutral Milk Hotel.
Oh, yeah. In an Aeroplane Over the Sea?
Yeah.
What a great album that is.
Oh, man. Yeah. All right, everyone. Are you all aboard the Jay and Joey train? Has this podcast made it to your road trip playlist? Well, please subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, and tell others about us. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at jandjoeypod. We have a Buy Me a Coffee. You can find those things and our Spotify playlist through the link tree in the show notes. And as always, be good to each other.